anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset.
Okay, welcome back. Thank you, everybody, who's been following us along here on our journey of the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. My name is Pete Dealey, and I'm here with my professor, Professor Lucas Hubo. Professor?
Hello, guys. Hello, everyone. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing well, but listen, Professor, I have all these friends that I've made along the way, and there's a part of my life where I do business consulting, believe it or not. And so I help people build their businesses, and I've been getting these phone calls and emails from them saying, hey, we like the podcast, but you're like the worst marketing person for in the history of the world. So let me just, to my friends that have teased me about it, if you would like to buy Submission Coffee, you have to go to the website, awellrunlifegear.com. And you can follow us at our Instagram at awellrunlife. And then Professor, your Instagram is, of course.
Yes, my Instagram is Lucas Hubo. Hubo with the Brazilian accent. So it's an R at first, not H.
Right.
And yeah, that's it.
All right. So all of you who have been sending me notes saying what a terrible business person I am for the professor and I hope that remedies the situation. And so go to our website, follow us on Instagram, and then buy our coffee, Submission Coffee. And how about that? That's
a perfect gig. Yeah, I love
okay,
it. That's
right?
Awesome.
Okay. Well, good. I got a group of people I need you to text to tell them get off my back. So listen, we are lucky today because we are going to get to have a conversation besides just you and I. And I really appreciate you facilitating our guest today. So with that, I'm going to allow you to do the honors of introducing who we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely.
Or who we're going to talk to today.
Sounds good. Thank you. So today we're going to be talking with Mina Burnside, one of the nicest person in the world. And also an incredible jiu-jitsu player. He's been someone that plays a really important role at Gracie Barra, North America, and here in Arizona as well, the state that we're located. And we would like to talk a little bit with Mina to give us her perspective, right, about everything that you talk, right, Peter and I.
Yeah.
On the previous episodes, having talked so much about trying to relate jiu-jitsu in life, right, and things that being comfortable in uncomfortable situations, but of course, being able to hear that from a woman perspective that is a brown belt, is being expanding so much, like so many years on the mat, so be awesome. Mina, thank you so much for putting yourself available to be here with us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This is incredible.
Awesome. So Mina, let's start with the best question, maybe like when you started to train jiu-jitsu, if you ever trained other martial arts before, maybe the reason why also you started to train, if you can just give us a little introduction about it.
Yeah, it's actually... thinking back, it's kind of funny because I started jiu-jitsu officially in 2013. I had just started like a big weight loss kick then as well. And I was trying to see what I liked the most. Like I loved biking around my hometown. I've never enjoyed running, but I did that just for the exercise. But when I started jiu-jitsu, I fell in love with it like right away. But I was also trying to do different other types of martial arts as well, because I've always been just super fascinated by honestly more of like the action movie style martial arts and everything.
Sure.
So I tried like Wing Chun at a little place that was in Franklin, Tennessee. And then I did a style of Kung Fu for just a couple weeks. And then I was also trying out Taekwondo at the time too. And I remember my mom, because I wasn't 18 yet, I couldn't sign myself up anywhere legally.
Uh-huh.
I was just 17. And my mom said, well, you have to choose which one you want to do because you can't do all of them. You know, we can't afford all of them. And so I had to choose. I kind of laugh about it a little bit. Now I had to choose between Taekwondo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And It's funny because I ended up choosing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at Gracie Baja, and then that just kind of like snowballed into where I am now out here. But and like back then, they had a couple different places that trained Jiu-Jitsu around where I lived. There was one, it was like a couple bucks a month cheaper, but it was across town. But Gracie Baja at the time, where that location was, they had a Friday night class that was open for high schoolers, just for the community. And so my mom called, and she like signed the waiver, had me go in and try it. And I was with a bunch of these high school I still laugh because I was with a bunch of these like high school wrestlers, these boys. I had no idea what I was doing, but I felt like an action hero, you know? And I could feel, as soon as I walked out, I could feel all of them saying like, she's not coming back. And then the stubborn part of me, it was like, well, bet. And so the next Friday I was back, you know, the Friday after that I was back. And then the wrestlers that were coming slowly started to dwindle down because they hated having a girl in that class. I didn't care. I was like, that's their problem, not mine. So it became just me in the class for a while. And then the instructor at the time, it was like getting a free private lesson for an hour until I kicked out apparently all of the other wrestlers, and they're like, we're not going to do just one class. So at that, you know, an hour for one person. So at that point, I was like begging my mom and dad, like, please, guys, just let me sign up here. You know, I'll help pay for it. I'll work there if you need for the tuition. I want to keep doing it. There's something about this that like I'm gonna do this with my life. And so they signed me up, and then I started doing like two, three classes a day, just watching the classes. Fell in love with it. Got addicted to it, like everybody. And you know, 9 years later, almost exactly 9 years. I can't remember what the first date was, if it was October 20th or November 20th, but here we are.
Wow.
That's awesome. Mina, any specific reason that you remember, like why you choose you? Because I guess you didn't know much about jiu-jitsu back then, or correct me if I'm wrong, but why do you decide to go for a jiu-jitsu path instead, like taekwondo and things like that?
So this is going to sound so like looking back, knowing what I know now, I want to go back in time and just slap myself for ever having to like second guess it. But Taekwondo only had two classes a week. Jiu-jitsu had five. They were both like the same distance from my house. I could, you know, walk or bike to both if I needed, but I was like, ah, you know, jiu-jitsu is more expensive, but I can come more times during the week, so I'll do that one. And also, the taekwondo gym charged like 20 bucks for every promotion, and I wasn't crazy about that. So it's like long term.
Were you an athlete before this? I mean, would you have thought of yourself as an athletic person besides?
No.
Because it seems as though it wasn't like you had a deep analysis of where you're going to go athletically, right? So it sounded like these are practical concerns. I can train this many days versus that many days. You have economic concerns, right? But as a person coming on to the mat, were you somebody pretty comfortable in their body as an athlete? Yeah.
Not at all. I was always very self-conscious because I have like thick legs, and I was always super self-conscious about that until I learned what a triangle choke was. And then I'm not kidding. That was the best self-confidence boost I could have had in my entire life.
How terrific.
Because
That's
like what
awesome.
I was teased about, I was like, I could kill someone with these.
So that's interesting. So, like, in terms of somebody as an athletic relationship to your body, you were seeking something because you were choosing between these different things, and then you made a decision based on sort of practical ideas more than like it wasn't an initial. You must have liked Taekwondo, but
I remember, sorry, I just
yeah,
remembered
plus.
exactly what's like, because there were a lot of different things to decide, but I remember what the final decision was. I went on YouTube and I typed in BJJ versus, did
All
BJJ
right.
versus Wing Chun, BJJ versus
Oh, wow.
karate, BJJ versus taekwondo, BJJ versus all of this. And there was a very common denominator of who was winning.
Oh, right.
And that was like after I did that, because I mean, I'm not kidding. I went to Barnes and Noble and I was like, okay, which like of the history of the sport, which is more exciting to learn about? Like, they're both fun. I definitely knew I enjoyed jiu-jitsu more, but I wanted to really like, because I wanted to think, okay, if I do this, I want to go all the way. So which one can I dedicate, you know, the next lifetime to? And then, yeah, the YouTube was the final nail in the coffin for everything else. Because there's this one video in particular where it's a jiu-jitsu guy versus a karate guy, and the jiu-jitsu guy lifts him up, throws him down, and you see the karate guy just like trying to punch from the ground with no power. And I was like, this is it.
This
That's
is it.
the one.
So have you, well, so starting, how old are you, you know, when in 2013, if I
I
might
was
ask?
17.
17. So started just at
Just turned
17 years old.
17.
And since then, it seems like nonstop, right? Like being training for all those years.
I went to college. I applied a couple different places. There was one place in Chattanooga, Tennessee, one place in Murfreesboro, and I got a better scholarship to Chattanooga, UTC. But there wasn't a GB gym out there. And I was like, I don't want to have to meet new people, like start over with the whole friendship building. I'm finally really happy with, you know, like I have a group of people that I trust, I really like. I don't want to have to go through all of that again. So I ended up going to school because if I lived at home, I could still drive. It was about an hour drive by the time I got to the campus. So I did that so I could stay where I was with my team and still train there throughout college. So
Awesome.
I took the worst deal for college, but for the better training.
So that, I mean, that's pretty, first of all, that's fascinating. Like at that age, that you were able to anchor like this part of your life in jiu-jitsu, which if you're an 18-year-old and you're, I mean, college has a lot of weight, right? It's expensive. It ostensibly you say, well, has a big impact on your future. And yet jiu-jitsu was so important to you already that it you shifted sort of any plans you might have had to accommodate your jiu-jitsu practice. And I'm really interested about this idea of so you weren't an athlete by your own like, and then you entered very seriously into this physical world. And one of the things that seems to come out of it is a better relationship to your own body. Like you talk about your
Oh
legs,
yeah.
like you thought, oh,
Yes.
these legs were before jiu-jitsu, I saw them one way, and now I see them
Yeah.
another way. Did that happen more than once? Like has jiu-jitsu changed your relationship to how you see your body?
Yeah, I would say so quite a bit because I mean it's not overnight. That's what I would always tell, especially the if there were like teenager girls who were coming to train, like if their mom brought them in because they wanted to build confidence, I'd say like you're never going to see an overnight change. It's gradual because I could speak from, you know, my own experience. And it became less and less about like, oh, how do I look right now versus what can I do with the body I have? That's one thing I think I love the most about jiu-jitsu is because different body types, like, you know, Professor Lucas, you and I have different body types. We're going to have entirely different games, and that's okay. This isn't, you know, some there's absolutely nothing wrong with like, you know, the super structured martial arts, but when you can have such flexibility with training every day, it keeps the mind creative, it keeps you creative. There's no boredom that kicks in because you can learn a technique that it works perfectly for you, but maybe I have to tweak it. Like maybe I have to get my hips higher because my legs are shorter. And
Yes,
that's
correct.
perfectly fine. That's the beauty. Like I love that part so much because there's not a one size fits all, except for the
That's
gis sometimes.
I agree 100% with what you're saying, you know, and every time that I'm teaching a class, that's what I'm trying to explain to the students as well, right? Like maybe the way how I'm teaching, trying to maybe probably something close that is work for me. But every time that you walk around to the mat, to the classroom, and you see all different body types and maybe different than mine, you need to, so for you, let's change a little bit this, let's adapt. And teaching the students to think like that, it helps them on, first of all, don't get so frustrated, right? With, oh, that doesn't work. Like, that's not like that. It's like, well, maybe we might need to change a little bit for you, right? And then you have your way to do the same thing, and maybe you can help other people later doing all that way, right?
Exactly.
You know, that's one of the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm curious, you said something that I really was interested in. You said the idea of your relationship to your body improved in thinking about what it could do, right? So not necessarily tying it to how it looked per se, but like what it could do, like was part of this change. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, because, you know, when I think about where I am as an athlete, like I'm a 52-year-old athlete, and my body can do certain things and can't, but I think like being an athlete is still a core identity to me, even though that's not really rational for a guy like me, right? Like I have 5 children that I look after. I'm married. I have a pretty developed career. You know, I have these other things, but a big part of my brain is like, well, what can my body do? You know, when I go to learn and the professor's teaching me, I want to be a good student. You know, like I want to be good at it. I want to compete, you know, and I don't even necessarily am attached to winning, but I want to be a good competitor. You know, I want to go and have a good experience. So that resonates with me sort of as, if I got too attached to, certainly if I got attached to how my body looks at this point in my life, it's, you know, it's looks different than it did, you know, 25 years ago, whatever. And so I have to make a choice. Like, do I wish that I looked one way, or, you know, I'm really attached to what I can do rather than, thank God, than how it looks. So I'm curious about that view, because I also feel like that has much more longevity as a human being. Mm-hmm. Like if you see your body as something beyond just an aesthetic vehicle that you want to be perceived in a certain light, but rather a human being that this body carries me in a certain way, is capable of certain things, you know, that's it's a richer relationship, in my opinion. So I'm just curious if that those thoughts occurred to you too. Or
yeah, I mean, before I trained, it was, of course, it was like, oh, I want to work out because I want to look good. Like I need to lose weight, so I want to look good. But then after, I can't stress this enough. Like you can ask my parents, jiu-jitsu took over my whole life. Okay. It became like an outlet for everything, to the point where my mom and dad said I wasn't allowed to talk about it at the dinner table. So I just would cross my arms and be like, good. So you won't hear me talk at all. And then now my career is just talking about jiu-jitsu. So that worked out really well. But there was something I remember. It was the first time I ever got a legitimate submission. I was in top half guard and I got an Ezekiel choke. And that was after a year of training. It took me a year of training to get a legitimate submission on somebody, because the guys I trained with were these big old country boys. They were massive. Wow. And so it was just me getting like that scene in Avengers when the Hulk just throws Loki over his shoulder. That was the first couple years of training for me. And I remember like looking at my hands after, and I went home and I was like, it works. And then after that, like, that would get, you know, the life beat out of me for another month before maybe I got lucky with like an arm bar or a choke or something. But that feeling of like, okay, I weigh 50 pounds less than this guy, and I was able to put him in a position where he was choking and he couldn't get out of it.
Right.
Like slowly, I don't want to say I stopped caring about how I look, because everyone, of course, wants to be presentable. Yes. They want to look good. But like everything turned into, holy cow, that just happened. I'm a superhero. Like, that's how I felt in my eyes. I was like, this is how Spider-Man started. This is how Batman started. And that's so awesome. That became like that feeling. Ever since then, I've just been like chasing that feeling of knowing like, okay, you know, I'm not as tall as other people. I'm not as, you know, physically built as other people, but I know exactly what I'm capable of physically. And I want to be better with that than I do with, like, that's my bigger goal. Of course, like I said, everyone, you know, wants to get in better shape always. I think that's a normal human, because you feel better too. But my main goal was, okay, if I could do, you know, this yesterday, maybe next month I can go move here. If like the the physicality of it, or the right. cardio of it, or if I'm not flexible enough to go inverted, what can I do to next month be able to do that?
Right.
That's awesome.
It became like, it became an obsession to the point of where it may have been a little unhealthy, but I was fine. You know, I was happy. So.
Yeah. Jiu-Jitsu bring that to us, right? So addictive on the moment that you start to do it and like it, of course, when you start to build that relationship, is the only place that the smaller person, while training, has not just a chance, but probably will beat a bigger person on training, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the only place that has ever happened. If you are really good in karate or whatever other striking martial art, and again, they're all great, mm-hmm. but on the moment that you guys are standing up and that person that trains is smaller and weaker, the bigger person has a really big chance to hit one punch that is enough, right? Right? And you just mm-hmm. want to bring that to the ground and to our reality. This changes. It's awesome. You just get, yeah, especially when it starts to happen right on the way that you want, it changes a lot. And Mina, I'm mm-hmm. glad that you were talking a little bit about training against big guys, right? You just changed a lot on the last couple years for good. Mm-hmm. And it's been, you can see more and more women on the mat. You see like children's and different type of classes specific by age group. So again, I started just in 2003. So it was pretty much one kid's class. You have kids between 4 to 15 to 10, whatever. And other than that, you were just going for adults. Remember, maybe have like 2 or 3 women's training. And sometimes on our 10 a.m. class, we have like 6 or 7. And then we have women's class with over 35 women's mm-hmm. every week. I want you to talk a little bit about your challenge there, you know, as starting first, super intimidating martial art. You were 100% content all the time, training against like only pretty much men's all the time and probably bigger, stronger than you. How you feel, and also if you can, you know, give a good advice for those women that are hearing us and still debating if jiu-jitsu is something for them or not, you know, how can you help them? Mm-hmm.
So when I started, I was for the first, I think it was about a year. I want to say it was about between like 12 to 15 months before another woman joined the gym, which that in itself is a challenge because I liked it for the aspect that I felt like Batman. I was like, this is so cool. When you watch movies, this is like, you can recognize the moves. That part to me was the coolest. So I was fine just, you know, getting beat all the time. I did have a couple pretty severe injuries that did come from one, not being aggressive enough for someone who was so mm-hmm. much smaller than somebody else. Like I got a concussion and I had to take about a month off of training. And after that, I was kind of angry with myself because I was thinking like, okay, if I'm the smallest one here getting an injury like this, then I need to stop caring so much about like, oh, if there's an accidental bump here or there, like I need to, like, this is life. This happens, you know?
Yeah.
So the experience I had the first several months were rough. It was the noon class actually with Professor Dan, was Coach Dan at that point. He was a purple belt. He was teaching. Yeah. And the only other gentleman that would come to that class, I'm not kidding, was 16 inches taller and exactly twice my weight.
Oh my goodness.
So he was, I was 5'4". He was, no, sorry. Yeah, I was 16 or 12 inches? Or sorry, 14 inches. He was, I think he was 6'7" or 6'8" and 250 pounds. No, 240 pounds, because I was like 120 at the time.
Jeez.
And it hurt so bad, like training with this guy, because he was just, he had like the country boy strength. He was just insanely strong. But I think that helped more, like overall, the pain tolerance got higher. There was a point where I stopped enjoying it so much. So I started just doing the evening classes instead of like mm-hmm. both. But one thing I really, really wish I would have said then, which I always try to tell people now if I'm doing classes, is feel free to speak up for yourself. I never felt comfortable speaking up and saying to him like, hey, can you slow down a little bit? I'm still trying to learn this. Or, hey, can you not use so much strength or so much weight? Which mm-hmm. That part, I think, is the biggest the biggest part that, or one of the biggest challenges for a woman, especially if you're already the odd one out, then you have to go tell someone on their training time, like, hey, you need to not train like this. Mm-hmm. But if it prevents injuries, then that's what matters. You know, nowadays, if someone's going crazy, I just feel comfortable saying like, no, I'm going to sit this one out, or no, I don't feel comfortable rolling. Mm-hmm. Because I've been through the injuries, you know, I've had my knee injuries, my elbow injuries, my neck injuries, my back injuries, and it's not worth it for somebody else's ego. Mm-hmm. Like, I would rather someone maybe is a little upset for a day or two, or, you know, if I explain to them, hopefully they're not upset, but versus, okay, now I have to take, or somebody else has to take a month off of training because their ego got in the way and they got hurt.
On balance, Mina, would you say your experience as you became more comfortable speaking up, did you find your training partners to be pretty respectful of you speaking up, or did you find a lot of resistance? Like, hey, you know what? That's not how we do it here. We every role is a hard role. I mean, how did you find your training partners' reception to when you did learn to speak up?
If I noticed that nothing changed on the next role, I would just not roll with them again.
Right.
You know, I would talk to him once. If it didn't work, I'd just like, all right, that's fine. I'll find another partner.
But on balance, did you find a lot of resistance to the idea of like going easy, or because I mean,
a few times. And those... I wouldn't even, sorry, go ahead.
Because Peter is that guy on the gym.
I am that guy in the gym.
The guy that hurts everyone.
Oh, no. I'm the smallest, you know, weakest person in my classes. These guys are all giants.
Yeah, you're the second. I'm the first.
But my experience, one of the reasons why I've loved it is that I found a lot of respect in people being able to talk through like, hey, I'm a beginner, or I'm looking to learn more than I'm looking to kind of like, this is an exploration more than this is a contest. And I have found a lot of receptiveness to that. So I'm curious if you found a lot of receptiveness also, or was that a challenge? Did you find that the cultures of the gyms were more aggressive in their expectations? And if gender mattered, like, did they either respect it more, you know, as if they were, you're rolling with a guy, or respect it less, like, hey, if you want to be here, then I'm, you know, going to be even more aggressive to make it uncomfortable. I mean, did you find any themes like that?
I think for the most part, what was really nice is I was there all the time, 2 or 3 like classes a day, helping with the kids' classes. So after a couple months, I think my team members there were like, okay, she's like a little sister. So honestly, 99% of the time, and it wasn't even like, hey, can you go easier? It was more like, hey, are you learning anything by just laying there? Like if somebody at the time, like they couldn't pass my guard, they would just lay down. And I asked my professor at the time, I was like, what do I do? And he goes, if they're going to do that, he goes, just tap. Every time they're just giving you a hard time, like, okay, you got it. Tap. Okay, you have my arm. Great. Tap. And then eventually they'll either like figure out what's going on. But honestly, for the most part, anyone that did put up like who didn't listen or who wasn't respecting that, those people 9 out of 10 times don't stay with jiu-jitsu because they're in it for the wrong reason. They're in it to win. And when they start realizing that the people they were beating before are beating them now, man or woman, whoever it is, that mindset, 90% of the time they leave because they're out of their comfort zone and they haven't found that balance of, like your shirt says, like being comfortable in uncomfortable spots.
Right.
So a lot of it sometimes was just a waiting game.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, we see that happen all the time. Like, jiu-jitsu is for everyone, but not everyone is for jiu-jitsu, right? It's a natural filter. So if you don't adapt to situations like that and you are there only for your ego and beating people and things like that, mm-hmm. the moment that it starts to get beat, those people, if they don't change, they leave, right? They're going to find another place, another martial art, or another sports, whatever. Jiu-jitsu is hard. Like, it's really hard, not just the techniques, but embracing all the challenges, right, that you have there on the mat all the time.
And it's funny because, like, what you say, like, there's times if I get caught by a lower belt, of course, nobody enjoys that feeling. But then it's like, okay, you go home. The next day, it's like, okay, do it again. Because I remember when I was a lower belt, if I got like lucky, or if I did something just right, maybe I'd get lucky and get a higher belt. And it's a cycle. So if mm-hmm. you can't handle that, you're not in it for the right reason.
Yes.
When you think about advising somebody who is the Mina of 10 years ago, and you know they're at a similar juncture, right? They're creating a new relationship to their athletic self. They're enthusiastic, but maybe not used to the type of communication that is required, I think, in jiu-jitsu, like talking about pacing and, you know, weight and all the rest of it. And it sounded like you have had a history of injuries that occurred in your rolling. If you were to advise either somebody similar or even your younger self, do you feel like you could have avoided some of those if you had a different mindset at the time? Like, did you resist past when you needed to resist and that resulted in an elbow injury? Or could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So if I'm understanding your question, like if I was to give someone 10 years ago who was in the same spot advice, like what would it be?
Yeah. I'm just curious if you could have avoided some of those injuries if you had had a different mindset at the time. Like, were they inevitable? Like you just, those were inevitable things?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And this comes out of, so we had Hiron Gracie come to class, right? And I want to ask, like, well, how do you avoid getting hurt, right? Because I don't want to get hurt.
You don't.
And so we're talking about that. He makes this comment. He's like, look, if you get hurt, it's probably your fault. And so I found that to be really like good medicine for me, of like when my ego wants to start talking about hanging in with some of the, you know, giant monsters of my classes, that, you know, that is not doing anything for anybody. I'm not helping my training partner and I'm putting myself at risk. Nothing good is going to come out of it, rather than recognizing this is training and it's time for me to tap and we'll reset and do something different. And that has been helpful to me because I've avoided, I think, if I had started this at 20, my attitude would be different about, mm-hmm. you know, when is it time to tap? The 20-year-old Pete taps later than the 52-year-old Pete who taps very, very quickly. But that keeps me safe. So I'm just wondering if you could have avoided some of those injuries if you had a little different point of view.
So not, I'm trying to think, there was maybe one or two from like just being stubborn with the tap.
Right.
A couple of them were from getting thrown. One of them was from lasso guard. I flared my knee out too hard and it popped. And then something went all wonky out of place. But it's funny because there was one or two where like there was one that sprained my finger. I was trying to choke and I recognized exactly what was going to happen. Like, you know, when you get that gut intuition. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman just like throws my hands off and I should have let go. Mm. I was being stubborn,
right.
And it popped and it like my whole finger was super swollen for a couple months.
Sure.
And then after that, that was a bit of a wake up call too. It's funny because yeah, I feel like everybody's in that spot where they, as soon as something happens, they think I should have tapped to that 5 seconds ago, which it has happened a couple times, but I don't think it was any of like the big injuries I had. The one when I had a concussion, that was just a fluke.
Yeah.
I don't think it was, like you said, it was more my fault. I didn't break fall correctly. I stood up when I should have sprawled and then I just got thrown, landed on my head with no break fall. And it was just a mess.
Mm.
But I think, cause it's like in life, I'm not saying if you're consistently getting hurt in jiu-jitsu, something is wrong.
Right.
But at some point, like you'll accidentally take a hand to the face or a knee to the face. Sometimes it's your own. That happened to me once. I gave myself a bloody nose trying to recover guard.
Yeah.
But it's life. Like I've, tripped over a curb and fallen face flat. I've fallen down the stairs more times than I'd like to admit. So I think anything you do in life, you could get injured unless you're just not living life.
Agreed.
Awesome. Mina, on those all years training jiu-jitsu and having so many challenges, I'm sure. And now, well, how close are you for the black belt now? Like, because you're being, what, like 2 years as a brown already? Over two?
Yeah, I got my brown belt in June of 2020. It was right after Arcadia opened.
Okay. So we always, like, the most important belt is always the next one. But anything that is specific mark your jiu-jitsu journey, like as a white to blue belt, blue to purple, purple to brown, you know, anything that were remarkable, you know, remember something that that was like super important, that was really cool?
I competed most at purple belt, which was a big wake-up call. Just the level of competition when you get your purple belt is all different. It's way more intense at purple than it is blue. Yeah. So that was a time when I started to have, like, I feel like everyone goes through the tough times of their journey where you start to question.
Because
like,
also you move here to Arizona, sorry to interrupt you, as purple belt, right? Mm-hmm. You're already purple belt when you move it. And then that's when you start to do more tournaments.
Mm-hmm. So I did some here and there in Tennessee and like Atlanta, but when I moved here, that's when I got super heavy into it. And it was one of those times I had a big like question mark of, you know, what I've dedicated so much of my life to this. But at the time I was like, I'm not getting better. I'm awful. I'm losing every tournament. And it was starting to second guess everything I put into my life and dedicated, you know, so much of my mm-hmm. time to. But I think everybody goes through those, you know, just a plateau or a rut, and then you just have to wait it out, which is the nobody wants to hear that of like, sometimes you just have to wait it out because mm-hmm. you can switch up how you train, which might help a little bit, but until you're able to figure out and like pinpoint exactly what it is that's making you feel that way. And that just sometimes that just takes time. Mm-hmm. So whenever I hear somebody else that talks about that, I always say like, hey, we've all been through that. Just whatever you do, don't stop. If you need to slow down, it's fine. Just don't stop. And so I had a lot of that time during purple belt of like, I need to slow down, but I need to really think about what's getting in my head so much. But I think overall, the brown belt promotion was the coolest. Like that one really stuck with me because it was right after COVID and like, or right in the middle of COVID. And that was stressful enough as it was, and I wasn't expecting it. Mm-hmm. I was lucky. I was flying under the radar for a while because I had moved here like 2 years into my purple belt. And I was here for about 2 years mm-hmm. before I got my brown belt. And it was, I was like, cool. I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to learn as much as I can when I can still make some stupid mistakes here and there without too much judgment. So like, you know, fine with the purple belts. And then, I was making coffee in the office and Professor Flavio says, you've had your purple belt for a while now, haven't you? And I remember like stopping the coffee thing, just thinking like, pardon my language, just shit. And then a week later, he promoted me to brown belt.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, how would you, so, I mean, when you talk about being happy about, you know, that promotion, surprised and all the rest of it, like what, this seems like the brown belt, you know, is a, because, you know, Professor Lucas has said this in the past, like if you make it to purple belt, then jiu-jitsu is in all likelihood going to always be a part of your life. Like you have, you know, we talk about the blue belt curse and on this podcast, Mina, right? I mean, we want people to try jiu-jitsu who haven't. And then mm-hmm. those people who are beginners like myself, we want them to stay because, you know, we feel like the vocabulary, like I've been trying to learn a little bit of Portuguese. And so like, I'll leave professor like,
well, Mina has a great Portuguese, Peter. You guys can talk later about that.
Excellent. Well, I've gotten so far as like three or four phrases, but Portuguese would be a lot more fun if I could speak, you know, very, you know, if I had a big vocabulary, right. And I could say all kinds of cool things, but I only, you know a little bit. And we feel like jiu-jitsu is a similar thing, right? Like I only have a small jiu-jitsu vocabulary. And it's everything that every letter and word I add to it, it becomes more fun to me. And so the brown belt, you know, if you've achieved a brown belt, I feel like you have a pretty high likelihood that the black belt is in your future because you know, as we said, like purple belt may be the tipping point that like, if you make it there, you're probably going to finish the journey. Mm-hmm. Although we know it's a small number of people who start, you know, some tiny percentage land where you, which you're remarkable, right? You're not many people achieve what you've already achieved. But could you maybe talk a little bit about like why the brown belt meant as much as it meant to you? I mean, what types of feelings beyond surprise and concern that now if you make a mistake, you're judged as a brown belt, not a purple belt? Like what else was going through your head?
I think it was, so at that point I had spent more than half of my like jiu-jitsu time as a purple belt. I was a purple belt for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it too is I was scared because I was comfortable at purple belt, because I mm-hmm. everyone has the imposter syndrome, and if they're lying about it, or if they say they don't, they're lying about it. Everybody at least some point has that imposter syndrome. And so that part was terrifying at first, because I was thinking like, you know, sometimes I still saw myself as like the one stripe white belt who kept trying to push people off of mountain with their arms, you know? So trying to self-analyze, I would always ask like, okay, is this, you know, is this, what does this mean? Like, there's so much pressure now I should feel like I should spend more time outside of the mats to study jiu-jitsu more. But the best parts about it though was that I realized like how fun the other half of jiu-jitsu is when you can start attacking the legs. I was terrified at first, and I was so afraid of like not just embarrassing myself but embarrassing, you know, my instructor. So my biggest fear at the time was someone to be like, he gave her a brown belt, okay.
yeah.
But then I started seeing like how fun jiu-jitsu is when you can start attacking everything.
Mm.
And it was a really, I went through a little bit of a rut after COVID too, just because I was away from like the physical mats for so long, stress and everything. But so I had to kind of find that just deep love for jiu-jitsu that I had. And it took a while. I'm not going to lie. It took a long time, but it was a huge help of like Professor May and Professor Dave, and just training with them so much
mm-hmm.
that it was like beginning of this year, I think, where I really started to fall in love with jiu-jitsu again. Cause it's just going through one of those cycles of like, I would train, but not consistent. I still loved it, of course, but I was, you know, so busy focused on work, so busy focused on my life. And then, I would train more and more with Professor Dave and May, and then that helped me just fall in love with it again, because you know how Dave is with leg locks, like just seeing how he would set it up, it's mm-hmm. fascinating. It's like a whole new type of jiu-jitsu just unlocked, and I get to start over again as a white belt, brown belt for learning leg locks, and it's so cool. Just that feeling of being so lost again is kind of refreshing sometimes. Because you can always have your mind blown when you mm-hmm. don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And I like that, because I felt the same on the moment that I start to put more leg locks and more different type of foot attacks on my game. It's the same feeling that you were saying, Peter, like you're just adding more and more and more words, you know, in your vocabulary. Yeah. And sometimes we even let other things away to come back to the legs, right? Until you'll be able to put everything together. You gotta let me not get this guard pass because I wanna work on this entrance here on this entangle and this. And then after you start to put everything together and actually become more effective on both, right? On top, upper body and lower body. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So now getting super close to purple belt. To the black belt, sorry. Now we're in Arizona, Gracie Baja, Arizona. We have Professor Vivi, Professor Nivian, Professor May, and soon Professor Amina. So we're going to have the fourth woman black belt here around us.
So weird to think about.
Which is incredible. All of them, like, super tough, great jiu-jitsu. Amina, did you have anyone on a competitive scenario, like, as a woman that inspired you, you know, on the lower belt to make you keep going? Because still, right, majority is men's fighting, but it's so fun to watch women's fighting jiu-jitsu. Like, it's so aggressive, mm-hmm. fearless, flexible. It's awesome. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I love watching the women fighters. They're so technical and they go to kill. They're not like, oh, we'll just have a good time. I learned that competing, like, oh, you guys are trying to disable me. Like, I want to leave on both my feet here, you know? As an earlier, like an early white belt before, well, I guess, I mean, the videos were available on YouTube, but I didn't really know what to look up. But I really, really always liked watching Fabiana Borges and Mackenzie Dern. And then it was the last, I want to say 2 or 3 years where I've been watching a lot more of Ana Laura's videos. There's one in particular,
All
the brown
these.
belt world championship where she's fighting a black belt and she's walking through an ankle sweep like the Terminator. This lady is grabbing both of her ankles and you'd think like, oh, that's a perfect setup. And it's, she just walks like straight through it. And it was after that, I was like, okay, I need to watch all of her matches. It was so cool. And she's just incredible.
Yes, it's crazy. Peter, I don't know how much you know about all those three. And for everyone that is hearing us, Fabiana Borges is multiple times world champion. She has a Gracie behind San Antonio
Amazing.
and in other places in
Oh, wow.
Texas. Mackenzie Dern, now she's a UFC fighter, right? She's a multiple times also world champion in jiu-jitsu, and she's a daughter from Megaton, like jiu-jitsu legend.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Ana Laura is also a Gracie Barra in Upland, right, Mina? In California. And if I'm not mistaken, Ana Laura is she's undefeated in her career.
All right.
She literally wins everything that she every turn that she goes, like Worlds, ADCCs, like everything. And it's crazy,
Amazing.
like she's so technical and it's scary.
Well,
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I
No,
was
go
going to
ahead.
say, like, someone who I looked up to a lot when I was in college, because there was a point in college, my junior, senior year, I was so overwhelmed with school. I knew I wanted to do something with jujitsu, but I knew, like, if I quit now, I have to pay back my scholarships. I'm not going to take out loans for this. I need to just, like, grit my teeth and stick through it. So I would just look forward to going to the gym right after school and just, like, help with the kids' classes and train myself. Because if I went home first, I knew I wouldn't go back out and train. And who I really, really, at the time she was way more active on Facebook, but who I looked up to a lot during then that time was Tammy Musumeci, Mikey's sister,
Oh,
because she was
yeah.
going to law school when I was in college. And so I sent out a Facebook message to her once. I think I was like a second year junior, first year senior in college. I was like, hey, I just want to say I love your post. Like it's super inspiring because I've wanted to, you know, to drop out of college and just train jiu-jitsu, but I see that you're doing law school and finding a balance. And so we had a really great conversation of
Nice.
like how to balance it. And it was really, really cool too. That's, you know, jiu-jitsu is such a niche sport that someone who is a world champion or who has, you know,
Right.
titles with their
Yeah.
name can reach out to someone who's literally just nobody. I was a blue belt at the time, I think, and, you know, give advice for that. So that's another incredible part about this sport.
It
The
is.
professor was talking to me about his trip up to ADCC and how the community, you know, although we have people that we might admire and, you know, the community is still small enough that there's
Correct.
access to people in a way
Yeah.
that's not. And I'm wondering, you know, it'd be interesting to see in 10 years when I look at our kids' classes at our gym, there are many young girls that are training. And so 10 years from now, as they become, you know, teenagers and in their early 20s and all that, there will surely be a larger number of women competing than there are today. And that is gonna, I'm so excited for that as a four of my children are girls. You know, I'm always like interested in kind of how women's place in the world changes over time. And I think, you know, the excitingness of watching women jiu-jitsu athletes, you know, as you said, they have their own way of doing the sport, but it's not less exciting. It's not like the less exciting version of jiu-jitsu. It's just a different kind of approach, right? Which is how many people I think perceive women's athletic. And that's not, you know,
Yeah,
true,
which is
nor
awful.
is it,
Yeah.
yeah, it is awful. One thing that, you know, as we kind of make our turn into the, you know, last couple of questions, if you're talking to a parent and that parent has a daughter and they're trying to say, they're trying to make a decision, like, well, my daughter has a variety of interests. She's not passionately drawn one direction or another. In those various interests, you know, jiu-jitsu is something it's on their radar. what conversation would you have with that parent to say jiu-jitsu makes sense for you to have your daughter try? Like, what's something you might say?
If it's like a teen girl who's in high school or getting ready for college, I would really highlight the fact that, you know, soccer is great. There's nothing wrong with any other sport, but jiu-jitsu could teach them something that may save their life one day.
Right.
If it's a child, I would just highlight the fact that, you know, jiu-jitsu is so incredible for their, not just like self-defense for a bully, but for their self-confidence too.
Right.
Especially with, like, personally how we've run our kids' classes. I know we practice, like, you know, yelling at someone like, stop, stop, you know, go get help. But just the overall confidence that it builds and that I've seen it build with kids. You know, there's one kid in particular. He will always have such a soft place in my heart because when he came in the first time, he was hiding under his mom's shirt. He was so scared.
Yeah.
2 years later, he's asking us, like, hey, Coach Mina, can I help with the Little Champions 1 class? He wanted to help teach the class. Like, that's right. How much confidence he got in that 2 years of training.
Wow.
So those two things, I would say, like, the skill that it teaches, because knowing, it's not as much knowing how to defend yourself in a situation as it is recognizing that a situation is about to go south really fast,
right?
And to getting away from the situation.
Sure.
I'm not trying to go and, like, you know, beat someone up who's trying to attack me. I'm trying to get out of there, and I'm trying to recognize that, like, hey, that look in that person's eye is not a healthy look. You know, I'm getting out of them. I'm like nixing the situation as fast as I can. That can save your life.
For sure. One question about the young student who has that soft spot in your heart. Did that student ever try a competition? Did they ever?
Oh, yeah. And he's done several competitions now.
Can you tell any stories from the competitions? Like,
I'm trying to remember. I remember his face when he won the gold medal.
Oh, my goodness.
But I can't remember, like, how that particular fight went. It's so interesting to see how kids see tournaments. I feel like they see it way different than adults do. They don't see it as, like, that self-conscious thing where it's like, okay, if I make a stupid mistake early on, I look, you know, foolish, or I look like I shouldn't be where I am. Kids go and they have fun. And they're like, I won. I lost. I don't know how, but I have a medal now.
Yeah.
And it's such a healthy outlook on how to look at, how to see a tournament.
So we talk about this idea. Professor has kind of taught me this notion of, like, jiu-jitsu, if you were you're too passive, jiu-jitsu will require you to become more assertive. And if perhaps you're too assertive, it will also require you to bring yourself into balance, because both sides of that pendulum are problems for you as a both competitor and athlete. And as it relates to children, in one of our previous episodes, we were talking about a similar kid, and that kid goes to a competition, and it's unclear on the way into the competition, is this going to be a good experience for this kid, or is this going to be a bad? Even so much that I think the professor talks with the parents, like, let's just be open-minded about what happens here, like, to set no expectations. And this kid has a terrific, he has highs where he, you know, he wins, you know, a match, and he doesn't win a match. So he gets kind of like this microcosm of life in this competitive experience. And so when you tell me about someone that came in and they were so rattled by life that they're under their parents' shirt, and then they, first of all, they stay for 2 years, and then they're, I mean, one thing about, we forget, like, going out on the mats, you're also in, like, there's a crowd. So, like, never mind competing. People get nervous just being the center of attention like that. But it sounds like this young person, like, went from being afraid to be even recognized as a person separate from his mom or his dad or whatever, to competing, you know, asserting themselves in the world, and then wanting to teach. I mean, that's quite a remarkable arc for anybody, never mind a kid.
Yeah, it was one of the coolest experiences I think anyone could have. That's why we do what we do.
Yes,
it's awesome.
That is awesome. Well, Professor, that's kind of like as good as it's going to get in terms of, like,
right?
You know, like a way to mark kind of the conclusion. Is there any thing that you want to ask that you didn't get a chance to ask, Professor, before we?
No, I have my notes here to make sure I wasn't forgetting anything. Mina is someone that I admire a lot for all her hard work and not just being a super like smart, nice, but also like super tough, you know. Mm-hmm. I think like we always say, jiu-jitsu is so challenging, and we overcome all the challenges that we have on and off the mat on a daily basis, right? Like, it's not just one challenge, okay, oof, done. No, it's every day, every day, multiple times a day, right? Or every class. And having her being part of the team and challenge herself and not just overcome the challenge, but also like growing so much, right? So first, I'm just looking forward for her black belt. That's more than well deserved. So I hope that day comes pretty soon, you know, because you learn that, you know, black belt is not only what we do on the mat, but you're already a black belt outside for everything that you do. And thank you for inspiring so many people. I think it's great to have your perspective for the millions and millions of people that hear us every single day,
that's
right, Pete?
That's right. You're about to be flooded with emails.
Yeah, close your windows because the paparazzi might be there.
Exactly. The professors had to hire private security since we started doing this. It's been crazy.
We are the private security.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right. So, let me add my thanks to the professor. And as a parent of children, you know, when I listen to like the story of you nurturing somebody from, you know, a position of not being confident and not feeling secure in the world to feeling confident enough to compete and then confident enough to think, I know enough to teach somebody. You're building our society in the way that I want the society to be built. You know, I want to be surrounded by people who feel capable and that they feel confident and that they're willing to help and they're willing to put themselves in uncomfortable situations for something that might be better. So what you're doing in your life has impacts that are going to have echoes in ways you'll never see. You know, you may not know that kid in 25 years, but that kid will remember you. You know, I can assure you that you've changed that person's life in a way that will stay with them forever. We have terrific coaches, you know, at our gym, and I try to make sure I point out like how grateful I am to them, because I know when you're a child and an adult looks to you favorably and like, nurtures you to learn something, and then you feel the turn of like, oh, I didn't know how to do this. I had the attention of this adult, and then I did know how to do it. That's such a powerful thing, and it's something that affects somebody their entire lives. So anyway, let me just add my thank you to the professors.
Thank you guys so much for having me on here. This was such a cool experience. I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
No, you were terrific.
That was awesome, Anna. Thank you.
I'm going to call my mom and dad and say, guess who just got to talk about jiu-jitsu for an hour straight?
That's right. Crying out loud. They can listen to it when they have dinner next time in case they miss you.
Exactly, yeah.
That's right. So with that, you know, we say thank you to Mina and the professor, and I, you know, we'll see you again next week for those of you in our audience. I think when you listen to Mina, it's a good example of like her experience with jiu-jitsu isn't been just a straight line. There are times when it went great, and then there are times where she had to kind of cycle through not loving jiu-jitsu and then loving it. But at every cycle, you know, her relationship to it deepened. She's about to hit, you know, a black belt status, which, as the professor has told me, means that you get to really start, that you finally made it to the beginning of the journey. You know, so I think as your vocabulary becomes so complete, right now you can really start to talk, right? Because you have a lot of the language informs. So we hope that for you guys who are listening, and that might be white belts, that, you know, you stay with it to get the language sufficiently to become a blue belt, and the blue belt to a purple belt, and so on. And if you're listening and you're trying to decide, is this for me or is this for my kid? We really think it's a great use of time to give it a shot. So we hope that we've inspired you to find a good gym to study and intend to give it a shot long enough that you really get past those beginning jitters and start to really enjoy it. So thank you both, Professor and
Mina. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.